Ode of Lord Vishnu. We'll hear some more about that as we go along. Where we ended yesterday was Swayambhuva Manu coming to where Dhruva was engaged in intense battle with the Yakshas to punish the Yakshas for having killed his brother, Uttam. And Dhruva gave many important lessons about controlling anger and what's appropriate punishment for wrongdoers from the king and what's excessive. And one of the final lessons was, well, the final lesson was take shelter of the personality of Godhead. But before that, creation, maintenance, and dissolution of everything and everyone is in the hands of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, he's, through his time energy, is making things happen in this world. And time energy takes away everything, including your brother, Uttam. And so the final instruction was, by dealing with the Yakshas the way that you have been doing, it's a great offense to Kuvera, who they're the servants of, and to Lord Vishnu, who they and Kuvera are servants of. So you should make amends with Kuvera and desist immediately. He stopped. And he asked for blessings from Swayambhuva Manu that he stay perpetually situated in devotion to Vishnu. So now, the last chapter of this section, chapter 12, is Journey Home. We're going to hear how Dhruva received benedictions from Kuvera, how he returned back to his capital city, how he lived for the duration of his kingdom as the king through sacrifices to the Supreme Lord. He, in the course of time, renounced everything, and then he attained the abode of the Supreme Lord in a significant way within the very same body, an unusual departure. So now we'll begin the final section. Kuvera pacified and blesses Dhruva. As a reminder, this is a discussion between Maitreya, who's in this painting, is in the white beard, and Vidura, who is, looks a lot younger than he really is in this painting. And Vidura is quite old also. My dear Vidura, Dhruva Maharaja's anger subsided and he completely ceased killing the Yakshas. When Kuvera, the most blessed master of the treasury, learned this news, he appeared before Dhruva. While being worshipped by the Yakshas, Kinnaras, and Charanas, Kuvera spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. The master of the treasury, Kuvera, said, O sinless son of a Kshatriya, I am very glad to know that under the instruction of your grandfather, you have given up your enmity, although it is very difficult to avoid. I am very pleased with you. That embedded in this sinless son of the Kshatriya is that Kuvera is not holding him accountable for what he did that was wrong. Giving up any negative feelings, this is from Dhruva's side, can happen simply by a superior's instruction. And that was Swayambhuva Manu. In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada comments, The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of Paramatma, or Supersoul. So, he's a worshipper of Supersoul, or the Lord Vishnu as the Supersoul. Oh, do you have Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 12? Canto 4, Chapter 12, I meant to request it. And I got distracted. Kuvera addresses Dhruva. Anagha. Anagha. In this one, to reassure Dhruva, meaning I don't hold you accountable for your wrongdoing, so you're forgiven. He further says that time is the cause of everyone's destruction. Time. So we heard a lot about time from Swayambhuva Manu. And Bhagavatam 1 says to understand about time. We hear when you do Bhakti Shastri, you study Bhagavad Gita, we learn there's five topics of Bhagavad Gita, and one of them is time, and the one that there's very little spoken about is time. The other ones get much more attention. But time is very important, so it gets a lot of significant attention in the Bhagavatam. And in chapter 11 and chapter 12, time is the cause of for everyone's destruction with some detail. So here's text 3 through 7. Actually, you have not killed the Yakshas, nor have they killed your brother. For the ultimate cause of generation and annihilation is the eternal time feature of the Supreme Lord, misidentification of oneself and others as I and you, is the basis of bodily concept of life and is a product of ignorance. This bodily concept is the cause of repeated birth and death, and it makes us go on continuously in material existence. My dear Dhruva, come forward. May the Lord always grace you with good fortune. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond our sensory perception, is the Supersoul of all living entities, and thus all entities are one without distinction, begin therefore to render service unto the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. Two more verses. Engage yourself fully, therefore, in devotional service of the Lord, for only He can deliver us from this entanglement of materialistic existence. Of the Lord is attached to His material potency. He is aloof from her activities. Everything in this material world is happening by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atma Mayaya. Finally, my dear Dhruva, son of Maharaj Uttanapada, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are, therefore, worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please, therefore, ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. Here's a check. You can write in the amount that you whatever you want. Put on the check. So, nice image. Bodily conception is like a dream. It is a product of ignorance and misconceived intelligence. Well, that image is meant to go with the text on the right. Time is the cause of everyone's destruction. Bodily conception is like a dream. It is a product of ignorance and misconceived intelligence. Therefore, give it up. And atad jhanat, from thinking only of the body, brings samsara. And the opposite of the jiva's knowledge and bliss, ignorance and suffering. Now we're going to, the mind is going to go somewhere, and if the mind is thinking only of, on the temporary, so happiness means senses, meeting sense objects and enjoying the senses. And that's, that meditation, that dhyanad is, perpetual suffering, perpetual material existence and perpetual suffering. So atad dhyanat instead of tat or sat. Naturally, Kuvera is, he's a demigod, he's a very elevated personality, he's a devotee of the Lord. He knows that Dhruva is too, so he's giving spiritual knowledge to this young boy. We already read 5 and 6. There's 5 and there's 6, so we're ahead of ourselves. Then we're going to hear some terms about qualifying or describing characteristics of the Lord. Now this is a big deal, because Mayavadis say Brahman has no characteristics. The Bhagavatam says the Lord has unlimited characteristics, an inconceivable quantity and quality. So worship him whose characteristics are adhoksajam, he's beyond sense perception. We heard this yesterday evening. Dhruva is already known for being sarva-bhutatma-bhavena. He's a meditator or worshiper of the supersoul of all living entities. Or literally, with the thought that all beings are like oneself. Sarva-bhutatma-bhavena. When the meditation goes to the supreme soul, it elevates the consciousness of the individual soul to recognizing, although the coverings are different, all souls have that likeness. Yes? So, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, or pandita samadarshana, seeing others with equal vision, is subordinate to, it's a byproduct of bringing one's attention to the Supreme. Say it in converse. One will not get that universal vision of living entities without connection with the Supreme. Say it the other way. When there's connection with the Supreme, then naturally there's connection with the other living entities. You won't realize yourself or others and see this likeness of all beings without God consciousness. With God consciousness, it's natural. So the Lord has this quality. He's transcendental in form, vigraham, without birth and death, abhavaya. He is the energetic behind his external energy, yuktam. He's aloof from the external energy, vira hitam saktya. He is the Lord who delivers from material existence. He's the Lord whose feet are worshipable. Bhajaniyangrihim. Yangrihim. So, where we ended, we read it already. Kuvera requests Dhruva to ask for benediction. So, here's what he asks for. Dhruva Maharaj, that most elevated pure devotee, who was an intelligent and thoughtful king, begged that he might have unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for thus a person can cross the ocean of material nations very easily. Unflinching faith in and remembrance of. Bhakti has everything to do with what the mind does and what the body does. Bhakti is not just a feeling, it is a feeling, and where there's transcendental feeling, the mind goes there, to that object of attachment. So he wants that. Constant remembrance, mama nusmara. And then the other part, yujicha, engaging in his practical activities with faith in the Supreme Lord. Bhakti is service. Prabhupada's comment, offering respect to everyone and seeking their prayers and blessings softens our heart and helps in unbroken remembrance of Krishna. Now, there was a stretch where Dhruva was like unstoppable, and so were the Yakshas, and they were really having at it. So he had, it was uncontrolled anger. And once that uncontrolled anger became controlled by the words of Swayambhuva Manu, now he's seeing differently towards the Yakshas, towards other living entities. So he's seeking blessings because Kuvera is offering. And he wants that unflinching dedication to the personality of Godhead, praying for bhakti. Kuvera was very pleased. And happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. Thereafter he disappeared from Dhruva's presence. And Dhruva Maharaj returned to his capital city. So there's an image, a sculpture of Kuvera. And when I was looking for the Kuvera image, I found this one. I was very surprised. In the Chinese Buddhist encyclopedia, they also worship Kuvera. They want wealth too. Even their Buddhists. They have high regard for Kuvera. So Dhruva goes back to his kingdom and he's going to rule for some time. And we're going to hear a few things, 10 through 13. There's his actions. He offered great sacrifices, profuse charities, offered everything to the Supreme Lord. That was his actions. His vision, he saw the Lord in all beings and everything in him. We're going to hear some more about that. That's why that asterisk is there. Then 12, he had qualities that he was endowed with godly qualities, respectful to brahmanas, kind to the poor, protector of all religious principles, considered as a father by citizens. And finally, his rule, desiring to decrease his pious results by enjoyment and destroy his sinful reactions by austerity, he ruled the earth for 36,000 years. So let's hear something more about his vision. By power of his mature meditation, he saw the Lord within his heart and externally in all beings. Now that must have been pretty amazing, huh? I mean, he's not just notionally, he's seeing. He's on another platform, huh? And then as far as his activities, his ruling, his desire to destroy reactions was exhibited out of humility. Actually, he did not have any pious or sinful reactions since he had developed prema. That's our Dhruva. But his humility is a Vaishnava humility. He's not thinking, I'm an exalted person. Continuing, passing many years suitable for enjoyment of Artha, Dharma, and Kama with undisturbed senses, the great devotee Dhruva, realizing that this universe made by Maya is like a Gandharva city manufactured in a dream caused by ignorance in oneself. handed over the throne to his son. Poor son, why is he, if he knows all those things, why is he handing the kingdom over to his son? Here's a dream, my dear boy. Because same as the personality of Godhead or Narada, having him rule, because he, the citizens need protection. So we'll hear some more about, you know, is this a philosophical question that is the universe real or not real? And if you're Mayavadi, mithya, it's false. Like a dream. That there's plenty of such references in the Bhagavatam. It's like a dream. So how are you supposed to rule it in a dream? It's a dream in, or it's not a dream. It's, well, let's ask this. Are dreams real or not real? That's, you know, is the world real or not real? Is a dream real? It's something. It's not what it appears to be. When you're having a dream, supposing it's a good one, supposing it's a bad one, supposing it's scary, supposing it's whatever it is. Supposing it's fearful, that something fearful happens. Your whole physiology is corresponding. You're perspiring, your heart is beating, it's something, you wake up screaming. There was, you know, it appears to, something is going on. You can't say it's absolutely false. It's not what it appears to be. So this world is not what it appears to be. And we should conduct ourselves accordingly. It's not what it appears to be. But that because it's not what it appears to be doesn't mean you have nothing to do. We have no duties. You have a psychophysical nature. You have some coverings. And you're engaging according to those conceptions of what your the circumstance of your covering. You go to school because you're so many years old, and you go to work because we perform our prescribed duties. Mama nusmra yujata. So he's now ready to pass on his rulership and protection of the citizens, because that's what kshatriyas are supposed to do, to his son. And considering that all things were affected by kala, upashutam, by time, he left for Badrikashram. So that's where he's going, Badrikashram. So I'm being prompted to read text 14 through 16. The self-controlled great soul Dhruva Maharaj, thus, passed many, many years favorably executing three kinds of worldly activities, namely dharma, oath, and karma. Thereafter, he handed over the charge of the royal throne to his son. Srila Dhruva Maharaj realized that this cosmic manifestation bewilders living entities like a dream or phantasmagoria because it is a creation of the illusory external energy of the Supreme Lord. And text 16 reads, thus, Dhruva Maharaj at the end left his kingdom, which extended over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas known as Badrikashram. So that's one day, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was encouraging me, one day, at least once, you have to go with a yatra group to Badrikashram, so we'll do someday. But it's going to be a while. So that's where, in Badrikashram, there's a temple where his worshipable deity is. Since it is made of Maya, The universe is real, like your dream. However, by ignorance within the self, it appears unreal and is compared thus to a Gandharva city in a dream made by ignorance. Interesting, huh? Here's text 17. In Badrik Ashram, Dhruva Maharaj senses became completely purified because he bathed regularly in the crystal clear purified water. He fixed his sitting position and by yogic practice controlled the breathing process and the air of life. He did this when he was a little boy. He's doing it again. In this way, his senses were completely withdrawn. Then he concentrated his mind on the Archa-Vigraha form of the Lord, which is the exact replica of the Lord, and thus meditating upon him entered into a complete trance. The question came up, was it yesterday evening? Did he do any deity worship? Because in the section, chapter 8, where Narada is giving instructions what he should do when he gets to Madhavan, deity worship is mentioned. And he gives, you know, some ideas of how the deity is, what materials to use to make the deity and so on and so forth. Now he's doing deity worship in his meditation. It's not just fixing his mind on the form of super soul, like this image shows, fixing his mind on super soul, but he's fixing his mind on the deity form. In any case, Dhruva experienced ecstatic symptoms because of his transcendental bliss. Incessant tears flowed from his eyes. His heart melted. And there was shivering and standing of hairs all over his body. So he reached the bhava stage. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence. And thus, he immediately became liberated from material bondage. Sounds pretty high, right? Well, listen to the purports. Mukta means liberated, and linga means the subtle body. When a man dies, he quits the gross body, but the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego carries him to a new body. That image at the top, like air carries aroma, subtle body carries the soul. Now, Prabhupada's writing, when one becomes liberated even from the subtle body, at that time the living entity is competent and fully prepared to be transferred to the transcendental or spiritual world. So that sounds really high. Like, are we going to make it? That's your question. That's your question. Are we really going to make it? Right? In this lifetime? Whew. Well, the good news is, We don't need a vacuum cleaner or something like that. We need to have the subtle body disappear. But bhakti process, it's developing of bhakti. And that means then the mind becomes cleansed. We were speaking about this in the morning class. The Vasudeva state, where the personality of God enters, where the mind is pure. So it's just bringing the mind by sadhana again and again and again and again and again and again with deeper intention, again and again, deepening as we progress in the bhakti path, deeper intention, thus the mind becomes spiritualized. And the intelligence becomes spiritualized. And the ego becomes spiritualized, or it becomes dissolved. The binding forces diminish and become dissolved by the power of bhakti. So we don't need something separate, is the idea. We continue and awaken bhakti by the bhakti process. And the bhakti process is very powerful, sufficient to carry one into the spiritual realm. That's how it works. Now his liberation It's a specific comment from the Acharyas. He achieved Dasya Rasa, that's not the merging kind of liberation. In relation to Dhruva, Mukti does not need Sayuja, but Dasya, according to the context of previous verses. Vishnor Anucharatvam Hi Moksham Ahur Manishinaha. The wise say that liberation means following Vishnu. I mean, this is just a commentary from our Acharyas, when we hear that he became liberated, just in case one has the wrong idea what kind of liberation, it's Dasya. Then, Dhruva saw the foremost airplane descend from the sky, illuminating all directions like the rising moon. Here comes the airplane. In that airplane, he then saw two persons, the best of devatas, actually Vaikuntha's residents, dark in complexion, youthful with forearms, and reddish lotus eyes, with fine clothing, crowns, necklaces, bracelets, and beautiful earrings, holding clubs. That's Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's summary of those two verses. Then, Dhruva Maharaj, seeing these uncommon personalities, were direct servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately stood up. But, being puzzled, in hastiness, he forgot how to receive them in a proper way. Therefore, he simply offered obeisances with folded hands and chanted and glorified the holy names of the Lord. That's what the image on the right is. Holy names. Prabhupada writes, even though one does not know how to please Lord Vishnu or his associates, simply by sincere chanting the holy name of the Lord, everything becomes perfect. This happened in other places also. One became a little confused when some special mercy descended. They didn't know what to do, so they just chanted the Lord's names. It's perfect. I mean, eloquence is also perfect, but simplicity is also perfect. It's the devotion, the place from which he was calling the names of the Lord. That's what's important. Tam Krishna Padabhinavishta Cheshtam Chetasam. As Nanda and Sunanda, that's the name of the two residents of Vaikuntha that came to pick him up. As Nanda and Sunanda approached him, Dhruva's mind was completely absorbed in Krishna. There's a Vaikuntha painting, very beautiful. In the Vaikuntha world, all the living entities are all in oneness with the Supreme Godhead because they never defy his orders. Here, in the material world, however, they are not samatha or agreeable. That's Vaikuntha consciousness. I mean, I just heard it again. I heard it in a recording. Prabhupada was in Melbourne. I heard it twice in New York. I heard that it was said in Los Angeles, although I didn't hear the recording. And I just heard one this morning. Prabhupada's in Melbourne. This temple is not in Melbourne. It's in Vaikuntha. This temple is not in New York. It's in Vaikuntha. We're all like transported to Vaikuntha just by hearing him saying that. But then he explained what he meant, because everything is in relation to Krishna. In service to Krishna, cooking for Krishna, working for Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That's Vaikuntha consciousness. So by Vaikuntha consciousness, Vaikuntha is created, or one enters into Vaikuntha through Vaikuntha consciousness. And that the orders of the Supreme Lord are everything in the Vaikuntha realm. That's being in agreement, samatha, with the Lord's orders or the Lord's wishes. And these show some of the activities in Vaikuntha, playing musical instruments, offering flowers, worshipping the Lord's lotus feet, and so forth. Of course, the majestic way in which that is done in Vaikuntha is one thing, and how it's done in Vrindavan is another. But samatha, agreeable. Samatha, this is, some focus goes to this from our acharyas. Here's an explanation. One who becomes a surrendered soul and agrees to the order of the Supreme Lord can easily overcome the stringent laws of nature. The example of Dhruva Maharaj is very fitting. Simply by becoming agreeable to the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, samatha, and by developing love of Godhead, Dhruva got the chance. And he writes in the purport of 22, what was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for everyone. And guess what? He says it again in the next verse. What was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for anyone. So there. Are you sure? Should we say it a third time? Now, there are other teachings that don't say the same thing. Just spend some time hearing a very detailed picture of liberation, moksha, from Madhvacharya's teachings. And he doesn't teach that anyone and everyone is eligible without the details of what he says. The Bhagavatam is very clear. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very clear. And our acharyas following him are very clear. So we should be very clear. Now, the process of bhakti can carry us there. The insufficiency is on our part, but the bhakti process can carry us there. So it's a matter of taking shelter of the bhakti process. You know, if you're cooking and you have a big pot and you're cooking for a lot of people and you want to make some rice, how long does it take for the water to boil? It may seem like a long time. You're standing there waiting for it to boil and waiting for it to boil and waiting. It takes a long time. I had this nice experience. During the period of time in the Henry Street Temple that I was the Sankirtan leader, we had this practice policy. Everybody in the temple went on book distribution on Saturday. The temple was empty, except for two people, the deities, and the pujari and me. The cooks cooked the Rajbhog offering and then they went out. And the only one left in the building, the president of the temple went out, the treasurer went out, everyone went out. These are all full-time services, except myself and the pujari, because I had to be there to take care of people's needs. They need more books, or something. They had something. So one of the practices with our temples was we served sweet rice at the Sunday feast. It was like a standard thing. So I got the opportunity to make the sweet rice. And it was made Saturday night because Sunday was the Sunday feast and had to be cooled in the refrigerator. So I learned how to make sweet rice. You know, that's what I was thinking. It take a long time. And you have to boil the milk. And stir and keep it from, you know, sticking on the bottom and the whole thing, the right amount of this and the right amount of that and cardamom and things. So it takes a long time, but eventually it became thick. And, you know, it got a certain thickness that meant it's ready. And you can turn it and let it cool overnight and then it goes into the walk-in refrigerator in the morning. So it may take a long time to make sweet rice. It may take a longer time to achieve what Dhruva achieved. But it's possible for everyone and anyone. That's our teaching. And what does it take becoming samatha, agreeable to the orders of the Supreme Lord and dedicating oneself? Quite simple. We're going to dedicate ourselves to something. We're going to follow some instruction. The mind needs some, this reference from Bhagavad Gita, the mind needs some direction from somewhere. A mind that's directionless is as a madman. So we have to take direction from, so we take direction in when the mind is controlled, that super soul takes charge. So we need representatives of super soul to help us get there. Nanda and Sunanda, the two confidential associates of Vishnu, said, "Let there be all good fortune unto you. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities. You thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of God, and we have been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world." Whew. Let's go. To achieve Vishnu Loka is very difficult, but by your austerity you have conquered. Even the great rishis and demigods cannot achieve this position. Simply to see the supreme abode, the Vishnu planet, the sun and the moon and all the other planets, stars and luminaries and solar systems are circumambulating it. Now, please come. You are welcome to go there. So there's where there is. It's a image, depiction of one universe with the vertical dimension showing the lower seven planetary systems. The middle planetary system is Bhuloka, or the earth globe you see there, Bhuloka. Above that is Bhuvarloka. We saw this same image before. And then Swargaloka, and then these three, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. In the image to the right, it's calling it Muniloka. And above that is Satyaloka. That's Lord Brahma at the top. So he's going to Dhruvaloka. You have attained the planet of Vishnu, difficult to achieve, which the devatas see but cannot attain. Stay there. The moon, the sun, the other planets. This is paraphrasing or translation by Vishwanath. The constellations and stars circumambulate that supreme place clockwise. So they're in a vertical dimension down from Dhruvaloka, but their movement is a clockwise movement. Vertically below, but a clockwise movement. Prabhupada's purport. While the scientist and philosopher go to the moon but are disappointed in their attempts to stay there and live, the devotee makes an easy journey to other planets and ultimately goes back to Godhead. Devotees have no interest in seeing other planets, but while going back to Godhead, they see all of them as passing phases, just as one who is going to a distant place passes through many small stations. There's someone on a train looking out the window, passing through small stations. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a really beautiful description of Gopakumar passing by the planetary systems. He's waving at the demigods and they're saying, "Bravo, bravo, sadhu, sadhu," and he just waves and he keeps going through the layers of the universe into the spiritual sky. So there's the Vimana and the two assistants. "Oh, Dhruva, stay in that supreme abode of Vishnu, a place not achieved by your forefathers or any others, which is worshipped by the whole universe. Oh, immortal, you are qualified to board this excellent plane sent by the best of famous persons." Again, that's a gloss by Vishwanath. So the two assistants describe. We heard this already. The planet known as Vishnu Loka, where Lord Vishnu personally resides, is the highest of all. It is worshipable by the inhabitants of all other planets within the universe. Please come with us and live there eternally. Warm invitation. So here's where it is, according to the Bhagavatam, fifth canto. The planet attained by Dhruva Maharaj is an eternal Vaikuntha, the planet confirmed by the following statement, fifth canto. Quote, situated 8,800,000 miles above Saturn, or 20,800,000 miles above Earth, are the seven saintly sages, who are always thinking of the well-being of the inhabitants of the universe. They circumambulate the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu, known as Dhruvaloka, the pole star. So that's the planets of the seven sages. In Vedic terminology, it's the Saptarishis, or Big Dipper. And the Saptarishis are above Saturn, and Saturn is above Earth in the vertical dimension. In a later chapter, it says, Shukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, 1,300,000 yojanas, or 10,400,000 miles, above the planets of the seven sages is the place that the learned scholars describe as the abode of Lord Vishnu, the son of Maharaj Uttanapada. The great devotee Maharaj Dhruva still resides as the life source of all living entities who live until the end of creation. Agni, Indra, Prajapati, Kashyapa, and Dharma all assemble there to offer him honor and respectful obeisances. They circumambulate him with their right sides toward him. I have already described the glorious activities of Maharaj Dhruva, fourth canto. So that's where it is, and that's the exalted position that he occupies. He's a great personality. These quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam show that Dhruvaloka planet is an eternal Vaikuntha planet, even though it is apparently situated within the jurisdiction of the material world. The situation of a liberated soul who lives within the material world is similar, as described in Vedanta Sutra. Here's the English translation of Vedanta Sutra. This is 4.4. That's the last portion of Vedanta Sutra's teaching Prayojana, the goal. Although situated within a material body which goes through the six material transformations, a liberated soul is actually situated on the transcendental platform. He has nothing to do with the changing material world. One can be liberated within this body, living somewhere within the universe. At the time of annihilation of the material universe, when all the material planets perish, the Dhruvaloka planet is not destroyed, but merely becomes no longer visible to the eyes of the conditioned souls. And according to Rupa Goswami, in his writing, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, the form of the Lord that's on Dhruvaloka is Lord Ajita. We talked about this, remember? Ajita. There's three names that we could think of. Ajita means unconquerable, and Prishnigarbha is the form that Dhruva saw standing before him. Satya Yuga, Prishnigarbha. That's in Lagu Bhagavatamrita also. And the form that's before him is Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So all three. Depending upon the feature of the Lord that's being addressed, he can be given different names. Yes? Mataji, is that okay? No? Don't look over your shoulder. I'm looking at you. Yes. Depending upon the feature of the Supreme Lord that one is invoking, a name, he can be called by a specific name. But it's the same Lord. Not different people and we shouldn't get confused by different nomenclature. Okay. This is a very nice verse from Quraysh's prayers. It's in Tamil, I believe, and translated into English. During the time of Trivikram Avatar, do you know who is Trivikram Avatar? Lord Vamanadeva or Upendra, the dwarf Brahmin? Trivikram, because he took three steps, Trivikrama. That's him. So during the time of Trivikram Avatar, the Lord grew up and up, and his feet reached Satyaloka of Brahmadeva. His foot pierced the covering of the universe, right? Second step. Ganga flowed in seven streams from there. One came down in response to the penance of Bhagiratha to Bhumandala. Bhagiratha. Yeah. Good. Bhagiratha. So one of the streams was brought to Bhumandala, that's this earth plane, not just the earth planet. In between, this is now Quraysh saying, in between, it crossed the Milky Way. Interesting. Some idea of the Milky Way in Vedic cosmology. And reached Dhruva Mandala. Dhruva Mandala is Dhruvaloka. The next stop was Chandra Mandala as nectarine flow. And thereafter it reached Surya Mandala to reduce the intensity of the heat of Surya. From Surya Mandala, Ganga flowed to Meru Mountain, and a small stream from there landed on Lord Shiva's matted locks and purified him. This is a picture of a structure of the universe in the form of a prayer. So the universe, very top is Brahma, and when Lord Vamana or Trivikram pierced the coverings of the universe, it was above Brahma's planet. Ganga came down in streams from there. One of the streams was carried by Bhagiratha to Bhumandala, but in between the Milky Way, Dhruvaloka, Chandraloka, Suryaloka, Bhumandala. Should we do it backwards? Bhumandala, Surya, Chandra, Dhruvaloka, Brahmaloka, vertical dimension of the universe. And from Surya it flowed to Meru Mountain. The Meru Mountain is in the center of Bhumandala, Mount Meru, the golden mountain that's shaped like a cone. It's flat at the top and more narrow at the bottom. And that's at the center island in Bhumandala. Fifth canto Bhagavatam. Okay, we're going back to the verse. When Dhruva heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. He did just like, hey, let's go. He purified himself. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Now, the sages, the references, he is in Bhadrikashram. So there's a lot of sages in Bhadrikashram. And the Vimana descended and they saw. So he's paying his obeisance to the sages. Before getting aboard, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the airplane, circumambulated it, and also offered obeisances to the associate of Vishnu. In the meantime, he became as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold. Now the commentary says, we'll hear, his self same body became fully spiritual. In many cases, in most cases, the soul leaves the body. In his case, the body became, the same self same body became fully spiritual. In the Bhagavatam, we find the same thing happens to the Pandavas, which is different than what it says in Mahabharata. Okay, so then he prepared to get on the Vimana. Commentary. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Bhadrikashram, there were other great sages there. As a humble Vaishnav, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the airplane, brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha Associates. There's a nice photograph of the busy season for tourists based in Bhadrikashram entering this main temple. Have any of you been there? Someday we'll have to go there. Now some details with the Sanskrit. This is his body becoming spiritualized. Vibrad Rupam Hiranmayam. Before getting aboard, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the airplane, circumambulated it, and also offered obeisance to the associates of Vishnu. In the meantime, he came as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold, Hiranmayam. He was thus completely prepared to board the transcendental plane. We read that. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, Hiranmayam means full of effulgence. Or in the BBT, it says body changed to spiritual existence. Hiranmayam. Dhruva Maharaj obtained a new body made of pure spiritual energy. That's not the way it normally happens. Sometimes the material body itself becomes a spiritual body by the inconceivable Shakti of the Lord, as in the case of Dhruva, the commentary says he had a glowing body. By the intervention of the Supreme Lord's inconceivable potency, the devotee leaves behind his material body and attains a spiritual body like that of the Lord, which is what happened with Narada. We find that in Canto 1, Chapter 5. That's what normally happens. Not 5, 6. So he left his old body and manifested a spiritual body at once. That's more normal, but what Dhruva did was different. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death. He's not like, I'll show you. He's giving his benediction to death personified. And thus he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. So there he is, getting on the airplane. And the two Vaikuntha associates welcoming him. Dhruva Maharaj suddenly, this is commentary, Prabhupada's purport, suddenly saw death personified before him, but he was not afraid. And he comments in Prabhupada's commentary, like a cat with a rat and a cat with a kitten. The kitten's not afraid, the rat's, you know, this is my death. But the kitten is not afraid because it's in the mouth of the mother. Gandharvas and demigods showered flowers and sounded musical instruments. Check out the flowers in the background. Dhruva was seated in the transcendental airplane, which was just about to start, when he remembered his poor mother, Suniti. He thought to himself, how shall I go alone to the Vaikuntha planet and leave behind my poor mother? No worries. The great associate of Vaikuntha Loka, Ananda and Sunanda, could understand the mind of Dhruva, and thus they showed him that his mother Suniti was going forward in another airplane. While Dhruva Maharaj was passing through space, he gradually saw all the planets of the solar system. And on the path, he saw the demigods and their airplanes showering flowers upon him like rain. It was mentioned already. That little asterisk by 32, we're going to see something further. This incident proves that a devotee, like Dhruva Maharaj, can fulfill all his desires. by the grace of the Lord, he becomes exactly like the Lord, and thus, whenever he thinks of anything, his wish is immediately fulfilled by the grace of the Lord. My mother, poof, she's going back home too. Now how, you know, it could expand to all living entities, but he was particularly grateful to his mother. So that's what happened with Dhruva. And we're almost done. Dhruva Maharaj passed through all the planets arriving at Dhruvaloka. We saw this several times already. Here it is again. That blue dolphin in the middle I sent to Bhaktidhari, a little description of what that blue dolphin is. That's the Shishumara. And there's two different ways in which it's used, but it's the second meaning as you when you get that document. It's a type of meditation used by yogis to meditate upon the configuration of the higher realms towards achieving those higher realms. That's their meditation. It's not actually something floating in the sky, an upside down dolphin. Now, when I discussed Shishumara, I mentioned this with Antardweep. He said, as far as he is concerned, the descriptions of what Shishumara is more resembles that of Varuna's carrier. That's the image that he sent me. So there's Varuna's carrier. The South Indian or Sri Vaishnava Acharyas describe it as a scorpion. So take your pick. Dolphin, scorpion, or whatever this entity is. It's got some Sanskrit name, Varuna's carrier. Dhruva Loka is situated above the sun and the Sapta Rishis. We read that already. But below Maharloka. And the commentary we read a little bit of. So where is, in this map, let me try it, see if I can get this laser pointer to work. Ta-da! There's the laser pointer. Okay. Right here, there's the Earth planet. That's, you know, you are here. That's the Earth planet. And Bhuloka. And then above Bhuloka is Bhuvarloka. And above Bhuvarloka is Swargaloka. And above Swargaloka and the Sapta Rishis is in this region just below Dhruva's planet, but below Maharloka. So it's above the topmost, very, very, very top of the Swargaloka region, but below Maharloka. That's where you see the laser pointer, that little red spot. That's where Dhruvaloka is. It's within the universe. It's within the stem of that lotus, but it's a spiritual planet. But it's located within the universe right there. Just like we can say, you know, the soul is in the region of the heart. So within the body is the soul and Paramatma. That's what's in that region of the heart. But it's in a transcendental position. When the body is finished, it's not finished. When the universe is finished, Dhruvaloka is not finished. Okay, so we're almost done. There's a nice illustration of the Big Dipper, or the Sapta Rishi planetary system, constellation, and says which one of those stars are residences of which of the Rishis. Here's a more modernistic depiction of the three planetary systems, lower, up, middle, and upper. And, you know, the lower planetary systems, it's not hell. It's the subterranean hellish planets, but there's great facility for material enjoyment. In the middle planetary region, doesn't show it so well. It's seven rings of islands and oceans. And in the middle is Sumeru. Doesn't show the golden mountain, but that's okay. And above that, you see the Saturn and the moon and the sun and other planets. That's in the upper planetary system region. And then above the upper planetary system region, go up here. This is Maharloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka. See, in Tapaloka, you see the four Kumaras are doing Tapasya. And then there's Brahmaloka at the very top. It's, you know, it's just a nice way of showing. Here's the planets, the residences of the Dikpals, the protectors of the directions at the top of Sumeru. And Grahasthas live in this realm, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. That's not precise, but it's attractive. Okay, we're going to read number 36 in case you want to go to Vaikuntha. If you don't want to go to Vaikuntha, you can hear what to not do, so you can, don't go to Vaikuntha. But Vaikuntha, travel. The self-effulgent Vaikuntha planets, by whose illumination alone all the illuminating planets within the material world give off reflected light, cannot be reached by those who are not merciful to other living entities. Only persons who constantly engage in the welfare activities of other living entities can reach the Vaikuntha planets. Which is good news. Means they're very compassionate people there. That's a nice place. Let's go. Bhadrani Charanti. Engage in the ultimate welfare work to all living entities. Prabhupada writes, a Krishna conscious being is always engaged in planning how to take all the suffering humanity back home, back to Godhead. Even if one is not successful in reclaiming all the fallen souls back to Godhead, still, because he is Krishna conscious, his path to Vaikuntha Loka is open. Sankirtan, right? Krishna Parayana is found in text 38. Similar message or meaning is here about Krishna Parayana in a moment. Persons who are peaceful, equipoised, cleansed, and purified, and who know the art of pleasing all other living entities, keep friendship only with the devotees of the Lord. They alone can very easily achieve the perfection of going back home, back to Godhead. Nice. These are spiritual qualities. We'll find nice sets of spiritual qualities in chapter 16, Divine and Vaniac chapter. Standard ones, samadrisha, equal to all, equipoised, shuddha, cleansed and purified, and so forth. So we read 36, now let's read 38. In this way, the fully Krishna conscious Dhruva Maharaj, the exalted son of Maharaj Uttanapada, attained the summit of the three statuses of planetary systems. Three planetary systems in this case means Bhuva, Bhuvar, and Swarga. It can also mean lower, middle, and upper. But in this case, that's what it means. Saint Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, descendant of Kuru, as a herd of bulls circumambulates a central pole on the right side, all the luminaries within the universal sky unceasingly circumambulate the abode of Dhruva Maharaj with great force and speed. So we just heard, so we don't need, not time. Discussing, maybe you can do this after we go. But, you know, what made it possible for Dhruva to reach Dhruvaloka? Following the verse I just read, the subject changes. It's Narada Muni speaking to the Prachetas. Now, a little summary. In the most adverse situations that Dhruva met, the harshnesses of his stepmother, his advice from his mother to let go, hearing from Narada how to practice the bhakti process, severe austerities, he conquered the Lord by his devotional qualities, by taking up those nice instructions. And Dhruva is a personification of austerities. When we start at the beginning, the first day, is when you think of Dhruva, what do you think of? And one of the young people, austerities, very severe austerities, but also following instructions. He took up instructions from Manu and Kuvera, even in the middle of going through the loss of his brother, and while at the peak of his warrior spirit. Like with Arjuna, it was before the battle began. This is while the battle is already undergoing. Hey, Dhruva, cool it. Huh? Listen to this Bhagavatam class. Huh? But it worked. So, introspection. We have some choices to make. Do we want to be a victim of those bad circumstances that play in our lives? Or you want to be victorious? Or you want to just complain? Not too difficult to make the right choice. But to follow through, then it takes some effort to go to Krishna. To move from it's all about me to it's all about Krishna. That's the sakam to nishkam bhakti. That's the story of Dhruva. It's a great lesson. And this is, I think, about the third time I've been through the whole thing. It's invigorating. Lots of very, very valuable practical lessons. And I like this image of Krishna. Isn't it nice? All about Krishna. The very end, we're not going to go through it. You can if you wish. Pala Shruti. It gives those who hear this pastime, this and that and the other thing. Benefits of hearing this pastime. It leads to the perfection of life, in short. Hare Krishna. So let's see if there's a portable microphone in the house somewhere. And if there's some comments or questions you'd like to raise. Okay, powerful microphone.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So in one of the slides, it said like the vertical thing for the different planetary systems. The one above Earth said that it contains ghosts and Rakshasas.
Yes.
Why would that be if it's better than Earth?
It's not better. It's just situated in a vertical dimension higher.
Okay. I thought that...
They have powers. Ghosts have powers that we don't have. Rakshasas have powers that we don't have. So they get a residence that's in a vertical dimension higher, but it's not like more advantageous to be a ghost or a Rakshasa than a resident of Earth. It indicates they have powers.
Okay.
That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. There's others, by the way, that's in the lower region, it's, you know, Bhuvarloka and Swargaloka. you know the sequence, right? Yep. Bhuvar. So the Bhuvar, above them is the Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Gandharvas, Yakshas, Kinnaras, Apsaras. You've heard those terms before.
Yeah.
So they're above in that same region. So they're, you know, they're Rakshasas and ghosts. There's ghosts in other places too. They have to go to that place only. Okay. They can hang around graveyards and other places.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a place for them.
Okay.
With powers. And then above that is heaven. So the ones that are the Upadevas, they're in this other region and they do services for the Devas. They sing and they dance and they do stuff.
Okay.
Play music.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. The Rakshasas can't go. And the ghosts can't go either to those festivals. Anything? Nothing. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. My question is, when the Lord appeared before Dhruv Maharaj, when he was 5, meditating, the Lord appeared. And so he informed Dhruv Maharaj about losing his brother. So my question is, why did Dhruv Maharaj did not request to forgive his brother at that time? And when...
Why did Dhruv not do what?
Did not ask to forgive his brother.
Well, Dhruva may forgive, but that's not going to stop things from happening the way that they're going to happen. You know, like in the Bhagavad Gita 11th chapter, when Krishna shows the universal form, he showed Arjuna, it's a done deal. These soldiers are not returning home. So the reason that Uttam was killed was not because Dhruva didn't forgive him. Whatever the reason, we don't know exactly what the reason is, but it's not because Dhruva failed to forgive him. What we heard is the time energy, which is under the Supreme Lord's control, and everything is developed and devoured by time. It coming into being and staying for some time and being withdrawn, it's the force of time which is under Krishna's direction. So we can forgive, but it doesn't mean even that supposing somebody commits Vaishnava Parad, and supposing the devotee gives his forgiveness to that person who committed Vaishnava Parad, the Supreme Lord may not forgive. You follow? Because he's also a person. Now, there's ways to overcome Vaishnava Parad. And certainly one of them is to seek forgiveness from the Vaishnava whom one has offended. But we're still dependent upon Krishna being forgiving and cleansing ourselves of the contamination that has come as a result of Vaishnava Parad. It's personal. It's very relational. We know when Dhruva went back, shortly after he saw Vishnu and Vishnu departed, he was all chummy and buddy with his brother. So he wasn't holding anything. He had already forgiven him. He'd like, say it or not say it, the Lord Vishnu knew his heart. He no longer was holding on. That wasn't the obstacle. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. And the second question. When Dhruva Maharaj boarded the transcendental airplane. So he said that he thought of his mother, that how can he go with leaving his mother back.
Yeah.
So wasn't that the material attachment?
No. And it, you know, for us it might be. For Dhruva it's not. His mother's a pure devotee. Through and through. Golden. Pure. And he knew it. So it was with spiritual gratitude and love. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. No? You didn't get to ask a question this morning. He's probably got 5 questions stuck. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. From the slides, remember when by the time Dhruva Maharaj reached his planet, so we I saw the slides, so the Varuna, Indra are waiting to receive him, or they're doing something, waiting to receive him. Are the same demigods or?
Yes. It is said that the demigods from time to time, they do go to Svetadweep and offer prayers to the Supreme Lord. Yes? So they're below in the vertical dimension, but from time to time they can go. And from time to time, when Dhruva goes there, they also go to pay the respects to Dhruva. So Dhruva is not a demigod. He's above the demigods, not just in vertical dimension, just by qualification. He's a pure devotee, and the demigods are not there yet. Now here, it's like the Kuvera is giving blessings. May you always have devotion to the personality of Godhead. You have to be a pure devotee in order to give that benediction. You can't give something that you don't have. But he gives a benediction to his capacity in any case. So, and then later on, the table is turned. He goes back to Godhead. Because he does many things after departing from Kuvera. He lives so many, many thousands of years of doing what he did. And then when he left that and went to Badrika Ashram and did what he did, he was in samadhi. He was squeaky clean, pure. And that it made him eligible. Okay.
How the demigods are able to go to...
How many?
How the demigods are able to reach that kind of Vaikuntha planet?
Well, we don't know. It doesn't say when they go, what's their conveyance. They do have vimanas, but whether their vimanas can take them there or not, it doesn't say. I don't know of any references says specifically. There may be some reference somewhere that I don't know.
Another question, Maharaj, regarding the Ganges. We saw that flow, how it is coming to the...
Yeah, that's Kuvera. Excuse me, it's Kuresha.
Yeah, Kuresha prayer. There it came to the moon planet and then it went to sun planet.
It's coming down.
Yeah.
It's just describing the vertical dimension of the universe. As far as I understand, what that verse is doing is just repeating the vertical dimension. So, what's your specific question?
So is that, my understanding was that from moon to sun it went and again came to Mount Meru?
Yeah. In the vertical dimension, the moon is higher. And the sun is lower. And then below that is Bhumandala. That's all.
Can I ask one question in the morning class? Regarding the Brahma praying with that humility to become a piece of cloth or something.
Far out, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was...
That's commentary, by the way.
Yeah.
That's Rasika.
So I was trying to... is it Brahma's humility?
Yes. And it's his spontaneous devotion. He's just like, spontaneous devotion. That's Vishwanath in his Rasika way of saying.
Because I was thinking if something the devotee uses or the Lord uses, it's just like a blade of grass. Maybe once in a while they might touch. But that, I was thinking why, I mean, that's very, very great humility. So
yeah.
Am I praying for it? So, I mean, where are we?
Well, and in the other than Vishwanath's commentary, that's also Krishna saying, Brahma, you're the creator of the universe. Why are you speaking like this? We're going to hear some more this morning, or tomorrow morning. It carries on the same theme. It's just, but you know, Vishwanath is, as that's why I shared this morning what I did. He's a spontaneous devotee. He does it without any consideration. He just like goes there and says these spontaneous things sometimes. It's an abject, it's something like, as I mentioned, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami saying, I'm lower than a worm in stool. And you know, he's feeling that. So, you know, but that's part of his abject humility. How can one think oneself lower than the strongest? And then write about Lord Chaitanya's life. That's so high when you're feeling you're so low. It's not normal. But it's a very profound kind of, profound humility is part of the characteristic of a spontaneous devotee. Rupa Goswami, the most exalted amongst all of the associates of Lord Chaitanya, would not even sit with the associates of Lord Chaitanya. He sat at a distance because he's unfit to be in their presence. They want to hear his writing, and he's too shy, he can't speak. Then he's instructed by Lord Chaitanya, so he has to speak. it's part of the nature of a very elevated person, and it's not cosmetic. Online? Oh, we have a question up front.
Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna.
So, during every...
You're the only one that has not started with Congratulations. You get a gold star for it. Go ahead.
So
is another way of
During every Yuga cycle, do all of these pastimes happen again, like Dhruva Maharaj and the Dashavatars and all of that?
No. Sometimes and sometimes not. Many times. Like, for example, I can't remember the number, but according to Rupa Goswami in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, when does Ramachandra appear? It wasn't the Dwarpa Yuga just before this Kali Yuga. Excuse me, the Treta Yuga, then Dwarpa Yuga, then Kali Yuga. It wasn't the previous Treta Yuga. It was long, so many ago. This is I'm forgetting the numbers. Many Yuga cycles ago. That's just Ramchandra. And then other ones, it gives some numbers. If you really want to know all that stuff, it's in Laghu Bhagavatamrita.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And it's a BBT publication you can read someday. Here we go. We're all sterilized, sanitized and everything.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Bo.
My question is not about today's class.
Okay.
I just want to know about your inspiration. We were reading a bit about you this afternoon while we were having prasadam. And
<Uh-oh>.
So it was at a very young age, probably around 23 years, you took initiation and you've been practicing for many, many, many years. So with great reverence and admiration for you, I would request you to please let us know what your inspiration or your great force was to come into Krishna consciousness. At least, you know, that will help us to elevate to a at least to a next level than what we are today.
Yeah, how did it get started is your question?
Yeah, what was that force for you to come into Krishna consciousness? And what is your inspiration or your teachings to us to continue in that spiritual journey?
Those are two big, very different questions. Starting and continuing. Yeah, because of time, you're coming at the very end of the discussion. We have online people also. So I'll just say, you know, the simplest, barest way. Something that I share with college students a lot, often regularly, is what helped me get started was a natural inquisitiveness. I mean, the Sanskrit is brahmajigyasa, but the way that I was thinking about it was there's a higher reality. I know that I don't know what it is. And I want to know what it is. The flip side is I saw unbearably painful inhumanity of man to man when people don't want to be treated inhumanely, but they treat each other that way. Why is that? So, you know, a repulsion from that and an attraction for reality. I had this idea, there must be a place where people are connected with reality and they don't live like this. I want to go there. I don't know where it is. But it must exist. There must be other people like this. And they actually are connected with that higher reality and I want to be there. I mean, it was kind of childish idealism, but you know, it wasn't all that, you know, I just had an intuitive sense. There's a higher reality. And that led me to, when Krishna saw that, he sent some tests, but he also sent something genuine. And then the answer to sustaining, three things. It's a long story and a short story, but the short story is three things. Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures, the holy name and Prabhupada. I made a perfect person. And that was pretty wonderful. And it's not like meeting, it wasn't like I hung out with him. But just, you know, being in contact with him as remotely as I was, I want to follow him. And it's still there. Okay? Those three things.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Let's go to online and then we're going to wrap it up. Pass the microphone, please. We'll try to make it short and sweet.
Yeah. So this is Atulya Mataji. It is exemplary to observe that Dhruva Maharaj, having a kingdom, found his worth in serving Krishna. Initially, he looked for biggest kingdom, but instead found Krishna and lost the desire to have material assets. In this world, people measure the success of their lives by measuring their net worth of assets. If they are deriving their happiness, pride and satisfaction through their material richness, what can help them to even realize the need for devotional service to Krishna?
Well, it's one of the reasons why there's suffering is when you don't have, you want, and when you have, it doesn't make it, and there's more misery than when you didn't have. So it's part of fulfilling the desires of, but also the built-in lesson. And honest people will recognize. You know, many people are dishonest and they won't recognize, so there's not much you can do with people that are self-deceiving. But people that are honest, then there's, you have a foot in the door. And you give them something genuine, and they go, wow.
This is Vishaka's question from yesterday. We missed. Why was Suruchi so mad at Dhruva when he was just sitting on the lap of his father?
She was envious. She wanted her son to become king. Instead, here's Dhruva wanting to sit on the lap or the throne. So she was envious of him. Her son can't be king because Dhruva's there, so get down. That was, you know, she's a nasty lady. That's what irritated her, her nastiness and envy.
Sri Radhika Mataji's question. After his first meeting with Srila Narada Muni, is there any further information regarding Dhruva Maharaj's relationship with him as his spiritual master during the rest of his long journey on the earth?
I'm unaware. There may be, but I'm unaware. There must have been, of course, but, you know, the details of that, I'm unaware.
Yes. Amara Mataji has two questions. The first one is, you kindly mentioned about bhakti, remembrance with deeper intentions. My morning question, does purity of mind come from constant remembrance of Krishna and his service, was connected with this? We should chant for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, and purification comes by mercy. Is this understanding right?
Yes.
Could you kindly comment on what should be our deeper intentions?
What should be our what?
Deeper intentions.
She already said it. That's it.
And the second question is, did Mother Suniti achieve Vaikuntha by effects of devotional service of Dhruva Maharaj or her own devotion?
Or both.
While sojourning in Krishna consciousness, we are concerned about our near ones and many others' progress to Krishna too. How can we help ourselves and them on this journey?
By becoming pure in devotion and being a good mother.
Radhika Priya Mataji's question. Persons killed by Vishnu get elevation, not liberation, regarding that topic. In Krishna book, it's mentioned that most of the demons were killed by Lord Krishna are not actually killed by him, but in the form of Vishnu. But most of them get liberated. So I want to know how.
Well, it's the aspect of Krishna. Let's just go backwards. Krishna is the source of everything. He is Swayam Bhagavan. And when he engages in killing, it's the Vishnu aspect of the totality of Krishna that kills the demons. It's that Vishnu aspect of Krishna that kills the demons, but because it's Krishna, they get liberation. Next.
This is from Mahati Kirti Mataji. Because of Prahlad Maharaj being so many generations of his, because of Prahlad Maharaj being a pure devotee, so many generations of his family members got liberated. But in case of Dhruva Maharaj,
why is there only his mother got liberated?
Why do you say that? What do we know what happened with the other subsequent generations of Dhruva Maharaj? Next.
Uttama Bhakta Prabhu's question. Although mind gets spiritualized by bhakti, yet it is not independent of spiritualized intelligence. Rather, it remains in touch with intelligence. Is that right?
I couldn't follow the statement. Could you follow it without reading it again? Could you follow it?
Although the mind gets spiritualized, it is still dependent on intelligence.
Directed by intelligence, not dependent upon intelligence. It's dependent upon Krishna. Everything is dependent upon Krishna. But the mind is directed by intelligence.
And Prabhu's second question is, it looks like moon is farther than the sun.
It's further in the vertical direction, yes.
And the 14 planetary systems, does it mean each level has multiple planets?
Yes.
This is from Satyabrata Prabhu. Does our determination depend upon faith? From where Dhruva Maharaj got determination?
Well, exactly the connection between determination and faith, it'd be hard to dissect and perform surgery on. How does this connect with that, connect with that? They're certainly connected. So where did his determination come from? His Kshatriya spirit is where it started. I want to get back. And, you know, take this option, that option. I want to get back. I want a kingdom. It was his Kshatriya spirit. That's where his determination started from. But it was channeled by the bhakti process, guided by his mother and Narada.
Giribharadhari Prabhu's question. Controlling anger with react and response as solution, or thinking of gratitude is more practical and effective? Is controlling anger with react and response as solution, or thinking of gratitude is more practical and effective for a sadhaka?
Depends on your stage of bhakti and the circumstance. What's more practical?
Mahati Kirti Mataji, did Dhruva Maharaj reach Vasudev consciousness?
Yes.
Sashimukhi Mataji, we say whoever Krishna touches will get liberated. But yesterday in the class you were mentioning that not all demons get liberated. Is it because of their intention or offense committed by them towards Krishna?
Demons killed by Krishna get liberated. But don't become a demon.
Here's one last question by Amara Mataji in follow-up to Rupa Mataji's question.
I don't think I'm going to do this one. She's had four questions already. I think it's good enough. Srila Prabhupada Ki.